Welcome to the deep dive. Our mission today is, well, it's a pretty important one, maximizing learning efficiency. We are going deep into the core reasons certain note-taking methods and study techniques actually work, based on the latest research.
Yeah, we're aiming to cut straight through the noise, the information overload. The idea is to equip you with a really solid set of tools. We'll go from the fundamentals, like the actual brain science behind handwriting, all the way up to some next-gen AI software.
So you can conquer procrastination and, you know, start learning smarter.
Exactly. That's the goal.
And our sources today, they give us this really comprehensive view. They cover the foundational why, things like memory, focus.
Mm-hmm. And the tactical how. So specific note formats, ways to read more efficiently.
And even the who, which I found interesting, the role of collaboration, accountability partners.
Yeah, and crucially, the where. We'll break down the modern digital toolkit, comparing some powerful knowledge management systems like Obsidian, Notion, GoodNotes, and OneNote. We really want to give you that shortcut to being well-informed.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the absolute basics. Why do we even take notes? I mean, beyond just having a record, we found that active note-taking, it really helps memory, right?
Fundamentally, yes. It helps memory, it anchors your attention in the moment, forces you to make connections between new stuff and what you already know, and it kind of prepares your brain for future tasks or assignments.
But the sources really stress something here. It demands discipline.
Absolutely. Active engagement, that's the key. It's the difference between actually learning while you take notes and just, well, passively writing things down. Being a transcriber isn't the same.
Which brings us straight to that huge debate, paper or digital. Handwriting versus typing. It's been argued about for ages, but the science we're seeing now, particularly this recent 2024 study, it's pretty revealing, isn't it?
It really is. The science points strongly towards handwriting as being, well, an agent of active cognitive engagement. That's the key phrase.
Active engagement. What does that mean in terms of brain activity?
It means handwriting basically turns on the lights across large areas of the brain, specifically the regions involved in memory formation, sensory processing, and even visual processing. There's widespread electrical activity.
So the physical act, maybe the slowness of it, forces your brain to process more deeply.
That seems to be the implication. Now compare that to typing.
Okay.
In stark contrast, the study found very little broad electrical activity with typing. The researchers suggested that often, when people type, they might be doing it without deep thought. Almost like taking dictation.
Just passively trying to keep up.
Exactly. Whereas when you handwrite, you're forced to summarize, to paraphrase, to decide right then what's important enough to write down. That selection process is active learning.
Okay. That makes a strong case neurologically. But let's talk practicalities. Handwriting is slower. Much slower. Aren't you potentially losing important details or context in a fast-paced lecture? Doesn't speed matter, too?
Ah, and that's where digital definitely has its strengths. Typing is faster, no question. You can capture a much higher volume of information.
And editing is way easier. Reorganizing things later.
Right. Editing, reorganizing, searching your notes, digital wins there. And interestingly, if your main goal is just recalling factual information quickly, say for a short answer test, typing can be effective.
But there's a catch, right?
Yes, a big one. It only really works if you review those typed notes within about 24 hours. After that, the benefit seems to fade quickly compared to reviewed handwritten notes.
And digital has other advantages too? Accessibility?
Huge advantage. Digital notes are easier to convert to different formats, easier for text-to-speech software to read aloud, and you can use AI tools to summarize them instantly. Big accessibility wins.
So it really sounds like the format depends on your goal. Depth and connection might favor handwriting, while speed, volume, and accessibility lean towards digital.
Precisely. You need to match the tool to the task.
Okay, let's shift to strategy then. Assuming you've chosen your method, how do you prepare? Most people just walk into a class cold. What are the key prep steps before a lecture starts?
Preparation makes a massive difference. First, preview the material if possible. Quickly skim reading assignments. Look for main themes. Check the syllabus. What's the specific topic for today?
Okay.
And importantly, take like 2 minutes to review your notes from the last session. It helps situate the new information. Context is everything.
And basic organization, like just naming your files or pages properly.
Sounds simple, but it's crucial. Title your notes clearly, class name, date. Keep them chronological. It saves so much hassle later when you're trying to find something.
All right, so that's prep. Now, during the class itself, what's the focus? You mentioned not just transcribing.
Right. If you're aiming for conceptual understanding of the big ideas, focus on summarizing the main points in your own words. That's key. Don't try to capture every single word.
Use abbreviations, symbols.
Absolutely. Develop your own shorthand. Use bullets, short phrases, not complete sentences. It keeps your mind engaged in summarizing, not just recording, and it saves time and hand fatigue.
Now, structure. Simply writing things down chronologically might not be enough for complex topics. Our sources mentioned several established formats. We don't need to list them all like a textbook, but maybe highlight the thinking benefit of a couple of key ones.
Good idea. Let's take the outline method. Its real power isn't just the neat hierarchy. It forces you, in real time, to decide the relationship between ideas. Is this a main point, a subpoint, an example?
So if you can't logically indent something.
Exactly. If you're struggling to fit it into the structure, maybe it's a new main topic, or perhaps it's not as relevant as you thought. It forces that immediate structural analysis.
What about something more visual, like the Cornell method? That's the one with the columns, right?
Yeah, the main notes area, a narrower column for questions or keywords, and that crucial summary section at the bottom.
And you said the summary is key.
It's often skipped, but it's arguably the most important part. It forces you to synthesize the main points in your own words very soon after the lecture, which is powerful for retention.
Okay, and for people who think very visually, maybe flowcharts or concept maps.
Definitely. Flowcharts or concept maps are fantastic for processes, step-by-step procedures, or showing relationships between concepts visually. Great for visual learners.
And speaking of visual, what about sketch notes? This combines drawing and writing.
It does. It's basically using a mix of handwriting, doodles, simple drawings, maybe some containers like boxes or clouds, arrows, lettering, to capture ideas visually.
Now, a lot of people hear doodles or drawings and think, I can't do that. I'm not artistic.
That's a common misconception. Artistic talent is absolutely not required. We're talking simple shapes, stick figures, basic icons. The goal is visual organization and emphasis, not creating art.
And does the doodling itself help?
For some people, yes. That little bit of focus, relevant doodling can actually improve concentration and memory because it keeps more parts of the brain engaged, particularly the visual cortex. It prevents your mind from wandering as much.
Interesting. Okay, so we have methods, we have formats. Let's talk about a major hurdle for many people, especially with solitary tasks like studying, procrastination. Learning can feel isolating. We found some maybe offbeat methods focusing on collaboration and accountability, like body doubling.
Body doubling. It's a fascinating strategy. It often comes up in discussions around ADHD, but honestly, it's incredibly useful for anyone who dreads starting a task or finds themselves easily distracted when working alone.
So what is it exactly?
It's simply working, studying, or doing any task, really, alongside another person. They don't have to be doing the same thing. They're just present. It
Cool.
can be in person, like at a library or coffee shop, or even virtually, just having a video call open with someone else who's also working.
And they're just there, like an accountability partner, but silent.
Pretty much. They act as a quiet, non-judgmental anchor. The key finding is that this simple presence combats that feeling of isolation. It significantly increases productivity for many people. It can improve mood.
Wow.
Yeah, and it provides a sense of social connection, even if you barely talk. There's an example of a writer's happiness movement where people just gathered to write. They could come and go, no pressure, but just being in that shared, focused environment made people more productive.
That shared container, reducing the activation energy needed to start. I like that. Now, building on that community idea, what about more formal study groups?
Study groups have the obvious benefits. You can compare notes, fill in gaps, hold each other accountable for showing up and doing the reading.
Right, the scheduled meetings help with procrastination too.
Definitely. But the real cognitive superpower of a good study group comes from having to explain a concept to someone else.
Ah, the teaching to learn effect.
Exactly. When you articulate an idea to others, it forces you to clarify your own understanding, identify gaps in your knowledge, and it really improves your communication skills. Plus, hearing different people explain the same concept in different ways can really solidify it.
Makes sense. But I noticed the sources also included warnings about study groups. They can go wrong pretty easily, can't they? What are the main pitfalls to avoid?
Oh, absolutely. The biggest danger is poor member selection. You need a good match in terms of commitment and knowledge level.
So red flags would be.
A group where one person dominates and just lectures everyone else. or where there's a huge knowledge gap, someone way ahead who gets bored, or someone way behind who can't keep up and slows everyone down. And of course, the group that just turns into a social hour and doesn't actually study.
Got it. So choose your group members wisely. Mutual benefit is key.
Precisely. It should be about mutual elevation, not just dragging people along or getting a free ride.
Okay, shifting gears now to a big efficiency hack, strategic reading. We often feel obligated to read every single word, which takes ages. If I pick up a dense academic article, how can I quickly figure out its core argument and decide if reading the whole thing is worth my time?
This is where you apply something like the 80-20 rule. The idea is that maybe 80% of the article's core value, its main point, its findings, is often found in about 20% of the text.
So how do you find that 20% quickly?
You scan strategically. Don't start reading from word one. First, read the title carefully. Then read the abstract, that's the author's summary, right at the beginning. It's gold.
Okay, title, abstract.
Then quickly look at any graphs, charts, or tables. Visual data often summarizes key findings. After that, read the introduction. It sets the stage and states the research question. Then jump to the discussion section. This is where they interpret the findings. And finally, read the conclusion.
So title, abstract, visuals, intro, discussion, conclusion, by reading just those parts.
You can usually grasp the main argument, the key evidence, and the conclusion in just a few minutes. Then you can make an informed decision about whether you need to dive deeper into the methods or other sections. It saves so much time.
That's a huge efficiency gain. What about tackling books or long chapters? Similar idea.
Similar principle, different tools. Use the table of contents and the index together. The table of contents gives you the overall structure. The index lets you pinpoint specific keywords or concepts.
Okay.
Also, quickly review the author's biography. If there is one, what's their perspective? Read the preface or introduction. What's the book's main argument? And within chapters, scan the subheadings. They act like mini outlines. Focus your reading only on the sections most relevant to your needs.
Got it. Now let's talk post-class. Yep. You've taken the notes, maybe used a good method. Is the work done?
Absolutely not. The follow-up is critical for actually solidifying the learning. Note-taking doesn't end when the lecture does.
So what needs to happen afterwards and when?
Ideally within a day or two while it's still fresh. First, just review your notes for clarity. Can you actually read your handwriting? Did you define those abbreviations? Fill in any gaps? Look up terms you didn't understand?
Then organize them. Maybe rewrite messy parts.
Yes, organize them. Maybe tidy them up. But the most crucial step is to summarize the key points of the lecture in your own words. This forces recall and synthesis. Then use those organized notes to test yourself. Can you answer questions based on them?
And maybe use office hours if things are still unclear.
Exactly. Use all the resources available. That follow-up process is what transforms temporary notes into durable knowledge.
Okay, so we've gone from the brain science to specific tactics and follow-up. Now let's tackle the challenge of managing the sheer volume of information we deal with today. If analog notes help solidify concepts, where does the modern digital toolkit fit in, especially for managing vast amounts of knowledge over time?
This is where digital tools, especially those enhanced with AI, can provide a real advantage, almost a shortcut to being consistently well-informed and connected. Let's start with Obsidian.
Okay, Obsidian, what's its main selling point?
It's free for personal use, which is great. It uses plain text files, specifically Markdown.
And Markdown's important because...
Because it means your notes aren't locked into some proprietary format. They're just simple text files you'll always be able to access and use, no matter what software comes or goes. It's future-proof.
Smart. And its key feature.
Obsidian is highly customizable with plugins, but its core power lies in bidirectional linking or backlinks. This is a really powerful concept for knowledge management.
How does that work in practice? What does a backlink do for the learner?
Okay, imagine you write a note about, say, the Cornell note-taking method. Later, you're working on a project about study skills, and you link to your Cornell note. The magic is your original Cornell note automatically shows a link back from the study skills project.
Ah, so it connects ideas automatically in both directions.
Exactly. Over time, you build this dense web of interconnected notes. You can see how ideas relate, discover unexpected connections. It's essential that you build your own personal Wikipedia, customized to your thinking. Plus, it has a Canvas feature for visual brainstorming, like a digital whiteboard.
Very cool. Okay, then there's Notion. This one seems positioned more as an all-in-one workspace.
That's right. Notion bills itself as the Everything app, or an AI workspace. It's designed for centralizing everything, knowledge bases, project management, documents, databases, It's very popular for teams, but also powerful for individuals.
And it has significant AI features.
Yes, Notion has integrated AI quite deeply. Things like AI meeting notes. It can transcribe audio, summarize meetings, pull out action items automatically, and enterprise search, which is pretty powerful.
Enterprise search, meaning it searches more than just your Notion notes.
Yeah, if you connect it to other tools you use like Slack, Google Drive, GitHub, Jira, you can ask Notion a question. And its AI will search across all those connected platforms, plus your Notion database, to find the answer. It's like a universal search bar for your work life.
That could be a massive time saver. Now, GoodNotes, this one seems to really focus on the handwriting aspect, but digitally.
Precisely. GoodNotes is king when it comes to the digital handwriting experience. If you like writing on a tablet with a stylus, it's probably the most popular choice.
What makes it stand out beyond just good handwriting feel?
It has real-time collaboration features, which is neat. Amazingly, it can actually search your handwritten text. And it uses AI for productivity too, for example. It can help turn your handwritten notes into interactive flashcards for studying.
Flashcards from handwriting, nice. And it has specific education features.
It does. Teachers can use a special lesson document type where they can see student work happening in real time during class, which is quite innovative for digital classrooms. They can even use AI to help group similar student answers for faster grading.
Okay, finally, the veteran, OneNote, Microsoft's tool. Where does it fit in this landscape?
OneNote is like the reliable, versatile digital notebook.
Mm.
Its biggest strengths are its ubiquity and syncing. It works really well across basically all platforms, Windows, Mac, iOS, Android, the web, and the syncing between devices is usually seamless. Plus, it works offline reliably.
So accessibility and reliability, what about features?
It functions a lot like a digital ring binder. You can organize notes into notebooks, sections, and pages. You can embed almost anything, files, audio recordings, video clips, directly into your notes. And it has page templates you can use to structure specific types of notes, like meeting minutes or project outlines. It's maybe less flashy than Notion or Obsidian, but it's incredibly solid and functional. The utility player, perhaps.
Wow. Okay, we have covered a lot of ground. We went from the deep brain science in that 2024 handwriting study through strategic reading hacks, accountability partners, all the way to these cutting-edge AI assistants and tools like Notion and GoodNotes.
It's a broad landscape. But the real takeaway, I think, is that knowledge isn't just about collecting information. It's about understanding it and being able to apply it.
Mm.
The best strategy, whether it's handwritten outlines, digital backlinks, or just having a body double nearby, is the one that helps you achieve your specific learning goal for that task. Experimentation is key. Find what clicks for you.
A great summary. So here's something to think about as we wrap up. We talked quite a bit about how just being physically or virtually present with someone else, a body double, can significantly boost productivity for tasks we do alone, like writing or studying. If mere proximity can have such a dramatic effect on output for work or academic tasks, what other areas of your life completely outside of work or study might benefit from adding a simple accountability partner or a body double, something for you to mull over?